Weekend Breakfast on 702.
For the curious.
So a lot of foodies are feeling very, very frustrated as during the lockdown, there's no Uber Eats, there's no trips to restaurants, there's no chance to indulge in the very best chefs of your particular corner of South Africa. Anna Trepido, author of Eating, our resident foodie, joining us now. And I mean, Anna, if you are a foodie, it's a trying time.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think for small food businesses, it's just a complete nightmare that, and you know, we talked last week, Rufilo and I, about things we could do to support those little businesses to ensure that some of them are still here at the end of this. And I just want to remind people that if they go to the Studio H website, there is a list of small, predominantly female-run food businesses that are operating in various ways during the COVID-19 crisis. And, you know, so that's a way that you can find ways of supporting those little businesses to still have your favorite places there when we all come out the other side of this.
It's a very, very trying time for restaurateurs, for anybody in the catering business. We just really don't know, as this, I keep on chiming in and saying, uncharted territory where we are, whether or not these businesses are going to be there in three weeks' time, never mind the months and years to come.
Well, I think we know that quite a lot of them won't be there. And that, you know, at the end of this, things are going to be really dire for those people that, you know, really are the keepers of, you know, all the best and worst times in our lives. You know, that restaurants are where we get engaged, we celebrate business deals that have gone well, that, you know, that those people are the keepers of our memories, and a lot of them won't be there. But yeah, I think that if one goes to that Studio H list, you can at least see in what ways one could support those small businesses.
So let's talk about what we can do in our own homes, in our own ways, in our own lives now during this lockdown to try and get ourselves and our families through it, especially when it comes to dinner time. I mean, there's only so many ways you could and try and spice up the menu at home unless you have a very, very long repertoire of your own when it comes to cooking.
Well, I think that, you know, apart from anything else, if one looks at Google Trends, you see that the recipes that are really trending, chocolate chip cookies is right at the top of that list, both locally and internationally, that I think there's quite a lot of comfort eating going on and comfort baking. But, you know, more than that, if you can't go to a restaurant and you can't mooch around a bookshop, you know, what you can do is, you know, Takealot.com are no longer delivering non-essential items, so you can't order food books online. But what you can do is Audible. They are an audiobooks online store, and you can order books that you can listen to, so you can just download them. And there's a whole lot of lovely ways that you can kind of vicariously be in restaurants. So, for instance, you know, Audible. Oh, and before I forget, Audible, you know, obviously you pay for those downloads, but they have a whole section, special coronavirus section, of free audiobooks for children. So if you go to audible.com, there are ways to sort of entertain children who are climbing the walls with stories. But if one's looking at food books, so you can sort of pretend you're in restaurants when you actually aren't, you know, obviously the most famous food book is Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential, that, you know, if people haven't read it, is a sort of wild, druggy ride through the kind of best and worst of what happens behind the pass in kitchens. And it wasn't intended to be a how-to guide, but a lot of, especially young male chefs, sort of just thought of all of this as like, okay, well, that's how I should be a chef. And in fact, in later years, Anthony Bourdain, the book was published in 2000, he wrote a new introduction, a foreword, just saying, guys, I really didn't mean you to take that sort of boys club behavior as the way to be a chef. But it is still, it's great fun. So if people are wanting something to pass the time with sort of vicariously behaving badly, Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential is a great way to do that. That I loved on the, it's a sort of updated version of the same thing in a way. There's a, I loved Eddie Wang's Fresh Off the Boat, which is also available on Audible. But if you've only seen, they made it into a very sanitized TV show about, you know, being an Asian American child growing up in a culture that was both very enticing and very foreign. And, you know, if you read the real book, it's again, it's very wild and kind of full of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, unlike the TV show. But it's very, very charming and very delicious as well. You know, there's lots of delicious descriptions of Chinese American food. That if you just need to be comforted, Nigel Slater's Toast, which is the subtitle, is the story of a boy's hunger, is. Yeah, it's very sad and very sweet, and it has that immortal line, it's impossible not to love someone who makes you toast. But it does sort of make you feel like you might come out the other end of confusing, difficult times. That my absolute favorite food book is The Settler Cookbook, which was written by Yasmin Alibi Brown, who's not a food writer, that in fact she usually writes about sort of politics and sociology. But she is she grew up in Uganda. She's a Ugandan of Indian origin, and she grew up during the reign of Idi Amin. And she's written this memoir of her East African Indian childhood with recipes that turns, you know, it makes you realize there are more terrifying things than where we are now, but that also it's just so beautiful and delicious. And, you know, you get a sense of this East African Indian culture and food culture that is both poignant and delicious, and all the recipes are wonderful. So that's my favorite food cookbook.
And then locally, I mean, a knee-jerk reaction to looking at local literature about, you know, being withdrawn from society as we know it, you can quite easily look to the life of Nelson Mandela in that book, Hunger for Freedom, The Story of Food and the Life of Madiba.
Right. And I wrote that book. So I feel a bit bad sort of saying, and here's my book. But then you can't buy my book on Audible. So but it's not plugging, because there is no way of purchasing this at the moment. It's not on Audible, and Take a Lot are currently out of business. But yes, it's a gastropolitical biography told through food. So, you know, that Madiba wrote beautiful, poignant letters all through his prison experience, talking about memories of meals past and, you know, the way that food can, you know, give one a sense of love and society. And, you know, it really did, whether he's remembering his mother's amasi or Ishmael Mia's curries or, you know, Molly Fisher's rusks, you know, that at every stage, you know, food and emotion and politics are very wrapped up in our culture. I mean, in any society where land is as important, you know, if you don't have land, you can't produce food. And so it's very bound up with the best and worst of who we are as South Africans. There is a terrible, terrible, sad cookbook. I mean, we're sort of moving into the territory of, you know, if there's dark tourism, there's also dark cookbooks. But there's a beautiful, beautiful, terrifying book called In Memory's Kitchen, which is a cookbook that was written by women in the Terezin concentration camp in the Nazi era. And what they did was they wrote on little scraps of paper they could find. It's an act of defiance, because they're saying, these are recipes we remember from better times, and we refuse to be defined by the worst thing that's ever happened to us, that we are also women who were mothers who made birthday cakes and chicken soup when children were sick. And so it's a memory of times past and a kind of hope for a better world. And, you know, the astonishing story of how this cookbook survived is in itself amazing. But, you know, that it is Again, it's on Audible, and it is a remarkable read if you're wanting just to have a sense that, there are people who have lived through worse things than, where we are now, and that you don't have to be defined by the worst thing that's ever happened to you.
Another one that made it onto the list here, one of my personal favorites, and it's, I suppose it's... It's definitely not a, cooking memoir, but it describes kitchen conditions in graphic detail. George Orwell's Dine and Out in Paris and London, when he's a plongeur in the Parisian chef's section when he was living in both cities as an absolute pauper. I certainly will be considering taking a relook at that.
Well, you know, the terrible thing about George Orwell is he is just so good. And, you know, every time you read him again, I mean, A, you just get so jealous. You think, God, I wish I'd written that sentence. But, you know, that if nothing else, this sort of self-imposed isolation, one can go back and either read or for the first time or reread these kind of classics that one ought to have read. And, you know, Down and Out in London and Paris just jumps off the page and is very foodie. And, you know, his descriptions of restaurants and soup kitchens in London and the reality of being poor in those different societies is very searing and very relevant even now. And again, is available on Audible, so you could download it today and, you know, remind yourself of why this is one of the great writers of the 20th century. That on a completely more kind of frivolous note, I think Fantastic Mr. Fox by Roald Dahl is one of the most delicious books ever written. That, you know, that it's a great description of the strain of social isolation when they're all stuck in their various little holes underground while the villainous farmers are trying to dig them out. And I mean, ultimately, it's about the power of a community working together. And they have that very delicious banquet at the end when they've kind of triumphed over the evil Boris and Bunsen Bean. So I think, you know, for children and grown-ups, Fantastic Mr. Fox has got a lot to teach us. And I still think Mr. Fox is my ultimate sort of, I mean, that he's the man I'm going to marry when this is all over. This Fantastic Mr. Fox. I love him.
Anna Trapido, it's always important to dream. Author of Eating, thanks very much for your time on Weekend Breakfast. Stay safe, stay sane, and thank you very much for those suggestions on what we should be reading and eating while we're on lockdown here in South Africa.